Kids, teachers, and parents have all been intently focused on back-to-school issues for the past few weeks. But just as some things start to settle down in the classroom, other issues crop up anew.
Learning loss is definitely a real thing. And I think that learning loss is probably the biggest concern.
Summer vacation, on top of distance learning during the pandemic, led to kids who may have forgotten their lessons or may not have gotten them in the first place. Those kids will struggle to catch up, and some kids will struggle socially.
These kids have not been around other kids. It's almost like when a new child goes to daycare for the first time.
From learning to bullying and health anxiety to social pressure, kids and parents are dealing with a lot of changes. We talked to a neuropsychologist about how to best handle all of that. And one big change is coming to the Culver City Unified School District. Their new superintendent is making a bold move to demand vaccinations for all staff and students.
Where we are, we're obligated to move to a place that where every day is safer than the day before.
Fox 11 News In Depth starts right now.
Hello, everyone. I'm Hal Eisner. Across the U.S., kids are going back to school. Some of them returning after a summer break. Some of them are returning after a long virtual learning experience. And some are in class for the first time ever. Parents and teachers are doing their very best, rather, to help those students cope with a return to the classroom that may have them looking at completely different rules, a different classroom setup, and also finding out just how much they've forgotten. A recent report from the company behind a widely used learning software system shows that half of teachers and parents think students have fallen seriously behind because of the pandemic. Canvas is the name of that software. And Trenton Goble is the vice president for strategies for K through 12 with the companies up in Salt Lake City. Thanks for joining us. We appreciate it. And what can you tell us about this? I mean, we're a couple weeks into school, and certainly we have kids who are biting their nails at this point.
Yeah, you know, I think it's important that people remember that the last 18 months has been incredibly challenging for both teachers and students. And as kids are coming back, it's another transition that students are having to make. And getting kids back in the classroom feeling comfortable and safe is obviously a major priority for teachers.
I think, though, the issue here isn't just necessarily of kids getting back to school. It's getting back to school after all these months of remote learning and, you know, missing their friends and all these sort of dynamics that sort of come together to create a bit of a conundrum.
Yeah, I think, you know, and teachers are tired on top of that, right? So everybody's, as they've started to come back to school, having to address those concerns, both from a parent concern around how their children are doing and making the transition back, but also as teachers are looking at things and trying to figure out ways to get students back in the classroom, feeling safe, feeling comfortable, but also really starting to get back into the swing of things academically.
Has hybrid learning been something that's helped or hurt these kids? And what's your sense of the impact of that getting back into the classroom?
I don't know if you can hear me, but I lost the audio on your end.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I got you.
Okay, sorry about that. Again, hybrid learning has been something that has had an impact on young people. And as we get into the school year, has it helped them or is it hurting them?
You know, I think one of the things we have to remember is kids are individuals, right? All kids are approach this very, very differently. We've seen kids who have done incredibly well in that kind of hybrid environment. And at the same time, we've seen kids who are coming back, obviously challenged from that experience. So many kids were lost during that time, not showing up to school, you know, not showing up and getting online, whether that was because they just didn't have access or there just weren't people there to help guide that. And so we've got to be very mindful of the fact that teachers have got to do a really good job of identifying where kids are at as they come back in the classroom.
Have you looked at data that indicates that there's been a drop in sort of the educational level of a lot of these kids, and they've got a lot of climbing back to do?
I think there's a lot of concern. A lot of the data is suggesting, at least on the part of parents and teachers, concern around, you know, the learning loss element. I think that the jury is still out, right, in terms of how many students have been affected by that, you know, and what the ultimate impact of the last 18 months has been. I think we'll be spending quite a bit of time really diving into that and figuring out, you know, just exactly how much this has impacted students' learning.
I guess the question is, for those kids that may have fallen behind, what's the remedy for that? How do you deal with it?
Yeah, I think it's a really good question. And it starts with identifying where those kids are. Good formative assessment in the classroom. Doing that as quickly as possible, getting the right data into the hands of teachers so that teachers are formatively assessing small little assessments that give them kind of a quick review of where those students are at. And really helping teachers to be able to utilize that data to target students for specific interventions and provide those additional supports. But it starts with understanding and identifying where kids are at.
You know, back in the pandemic of 1918, I haven't read anything on this, but I imagine since they didn't have computers, they didn't have a very good environment for trying to do hybrid learning or remote learning. Here we are with technology getting us forward and through this pandemic. Will technology be helpful going forward?
Yeah, you know, in our survey, that was one of the questions we asked teachers and students. And, you know, honestly, for a lot of teachers, that was a big challenge for them to make that transition to a more digital classroom environment. Obviously, for students at home, you know, schools, districts really had to focus on getting students access both to the internet and to devices. But the work that was done post all of that, I think teachers made a tremendous investment in utilizing those technologies and being able to connect with students, but, you know, outside of school, which is something that I think parents are growing to expect. As their kids go back in the classroom, that they're going to maintain that, you know, kind of access to what their students are supposed to be doing.
We have less than a minute in this segment. I wonder if you have some thoughts to the parents that are watching and things they should think about, things they should look for, things that might help their kids. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I'll approach this both from the standpoint of a parent, as a former teacher and principal. You know, I think the key thing is to be engaged. Talk to your kids, you know, make sure you're getting a sense of how they're feeling. If they're feeling overwhelmed, talk to them and make sure that you are connecting and communicating with your students, teachers, with your school. The more engaged you can be, the more time that you spend listening to your kids and really start, you know, really trying to support them where they are and not adding all of that additional pressure of, you know, you're behind, we need to race to catch you up. It's really about, you know, figuring out where they are, supporting them, and then working with your schools to make sure your children are getting the help that they need.
We live in interesting times, right? Trenton Goble, thank you very much for joining us and sharing some of that information. Appreciate it. And coming up next on Fox 11 News in Depth, one local school district has taken a bold step to keep students and staff safe. The superintendent is mandating vaccines for all personnel and older students. We'll show you where this is happening right after the break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Fox 11 News in Depth. I'm Hal Eisner. Even though students returning to in-person schooling, the pandemic is far from over. We all know that. And those students are dealing with new rules over in Culver City when it comes to managing COVID-19. So we want to talk a little bit about that. We want to talk about what these kids are going through and what's different in this school district than in other school districts. The head of this one district, Culver City Unified, Quoc Tran, with us right now. You and I talked about a week ago. We talked on the day that school started. You had only been at work for 4 days. It was a new job. And you put in place a mandate that for many was controversial. Tell us what that is. Tell us how it's working.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the opportunity. We did have to act very quickly and decisively in order to restore the lack of information that was, you know, keeping our parents from wondering, should we bring back the children, is it safe, and so on and so forth. So with the support from our Board of Education, as well as all the leaders in our district, including our union leads, we decided to mandate three things, specifically three things. Number one is mask, to wear a mask indoors and in most cases also outdoors. The second one is testing for students and adults regardless of vaccination status. And then the third mandate is basically vaccination. Those who are eligible to receive the vaccine will be required to do so. Children age 12 and older, as well as all the adults, volunteers, the staff member, teachers, administrators in the district. So let me repeat that again. So we're pushing out all three measures that we are planning to, you know, working them in layering, the mask wearing, the testing, and then the vaccine. And
you know,
the deadline.
It seems like you may be the only district in the country doing this.
I did hear that yes, it seems like Culver City Unified School District is the only district, the K-12 district in the country that is pushing to this level.
So what has been the reaction? I mean, you know, are you getting a lot of support?
The parents and the community at large in Culver City is extremely supportive of the measures that we have proposed. And obviously, we do also have parents with concern about the efficacy as well as the safety of the vaccine. And we're addressing their concern as well. But overall, at this point, it's almost 90% of our parents and students are in favor of the protective measures that we are mandating.
All right. So for a moment, let's talk about those who are not in favor of this. We talked the other day when I was out at the school district to some of the people picking up their kids, some of the parents. Let's listen to what one parent told me about your plan to have all kids vaccinated and staff. Let's listen.
I don't agree with it. It should be a choice. It seems like ever since the vaccination started, it spiked again. So me personally, I don't have it. And my job is trying to force me to get it as well.
So you're not vaccinated. You don't want your kids to be vaccinated.
No, sir.
All right. So there's one point of view. Should point out there that the vaccinations are not causing the virus. It's the Delta variant that has been spiking mostly there. But I mean, what do you say to those parents? Are you getting many parents like that? And what will you do for those parents that don't want to be told what they have to do?
I highly respect the parental choices when it comes to this is a choice that the district should not be mandating. But on the other hand, district has always been able to require vaccination as a prerequisite before you can enroll a child in kindergarten. And I believe that decision has gone back to had been adjudicated by the Supreme Court since 1906. So it's not something new. Our parents had always been required to provide inoculation vaccination for children.
But pardon me for interrupting. Let me just ask you, I mean, that parent there, you're hearing many parents like him.
Yes, the rejection or the doubt about mandating something that they themselves do not feel comfortable to let their children receive the vaccine. So that is one reason. Not comfortable whether this vaccine is safe or not, is it's going to work or not, or is it going to cause some serious long-term harms that we do not know at this point. So that those are the main concerns of one particular point of view. Yes.
Now, you know, one of the things you and I talked about on that first day of school was that depending on the size of the number of people that don't want to do this, you might have to take those people, put them in a classroom, separate their desks 6 feet apart, put in separate protocols for them, and not have them in the main population of the rest of the students. Is that still your thinking? And we also know that in LA Unified, the week, 2 weeks before the school start of school, there were 3,500 who tested positive for COVID. We know in the first week of school, the second round of data showed about 1,100. What are you seeing in your district?
So far, we did have some cases manifesting in some of our elementary school and even high school. I think at this point, we're still under 10. I might need to check and verify that at this moment, but we have about 10 or less cases across the 7,100 student population at this point. But let me address the students who will not be in the position to receive the vaccine, even though they're eligible for it. We already have over half of our population, our student population, the K-6 population, because they're younger than 12, there's no vaccine available for them. So I would want to reframe the protection for the older children who are not able to receive the vaccine due to a variety of reasons. that they will fall under the same kind of protection, the same kind of program design that we are currently having that in place children who are younger.
Okay.
It's the same thing.
Forgive me. We have to wrap it up here, but I think November 16th is the deadline for all these parents to fall in line with the mandate or address this with you on a separate basis. We'll stay in touch with you. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Hal.
All right. And coming up on Fox 11 News in Depth, while for some, the return to in-person learning is exciting, for many kids and parents, it opens a floodgate of anxiety. And that just gets added to a year and a half of COVID stressors. We'll talk about that when Fox 11 News in Depth continues right after this. Welcome back to Fox 11 News in Depth. I'm Hal Eisner, and for many parents and students, they're reaching the breaking point when it comes to stress. After a year and a half of changes, having kids go back to school in person is provoking even more anxiety. Dr. Sanam Hafiz is a neuropsychologist. She's the director of the Comprehend the Mind organization, right? And so what is that organization? What does that do?
Well, I'm in charge of doing assessments and evaluations for children and adults, and I look into things like ADHD, learning disabilities, autism, and I help both parents and clinicians and even school practitioners decide how to help a student succeed.
So help us with that. So as these kids are navigating these stress landmines, what are they to do, and how should parents guide them?
Well, I mean, it's definitely a tricky time for both children and adults. I think one of the important things that I stress in, you know, whatever interviews I have, even with my patients directly, is to have more clear and direct conversations with your children and in your family. You know, your children are going to go out there and basically parrot what they hear at home. Even the older kids, even the teenagers, you know, who have access to social media, for the most part, they're going to have the same beliefs and the same attitudes as you do. So at the beginning of this pandemic, I was sort of telling parents, I said, look, you know, your fears are going to get passed down. So the more fearful you are, the more you can kind of give rise to anxiety. And I'm not saying there's a direct correlation, but I have seen an increase in children who are exhibiting obsessive compulsive behaviors, excessive hand washing, worrying about losing loved ones. But now we're kind of moving out of that. And, you know, we had this sort of like a false start to re-entry, and then we got hit with the Delta pandemic. So I feel like we're constantly in this loop, and children, you know, if they have parents who can't quite explain it to them or don't feel or appear very confident, the children are going to take on some of those insecurities as well.
I'm not sure what age we may be talking about here, but you know, do we have children that you've seen or you've heard about that have been maybe extroverted kids, and all of a sudden now they become introverted kids?
Yeah. You know, the brain is plastic, and it's also continually changing, especially when you're young. So developmental stages obviously play into that. You know, a child who may be 16 or 17 might have a better or a surer sense of themselves than someone, let's say, who is entering middle grade, middle school. So I feel like, you know, children are kind of playing with their own emotions and with their own sense of normalcy and their own sense of how sure they feel returning back to school. Some children, as you said, are very eager to get back to school. They miss their friends. They miss being in the classroom. One of the things that I'm seeing a lot are children who are struggling with completing their work. You know, they need that in-person accountability. They need a teacher to kind of walk over and say, hey, do you need help with that? Or a student to be able to go up to a teacher and say, you know, I'm kind of lost. I'm floundering. But there are a lot of children who enjoyed sort of the disconnect and are nervous about going back to school. Their social anxiety is a real thing for both children and adults. And it's a very delicate situation. The way you cope with it, the way you address it, will not only set the stage for the next year or two, but really as they go into adulthood. So you have to be very mindful in the kind of words that we use and the way we sort of frame this stage in their life.
You talk about the notion of kids parroting their parents. For kids who have parents who don't favor masks and who don't favor mask mandates, could those kids, based on your studies there, become victims of bullying because of what the other kids are thinking about what your kid may be doing with a mask?
Yeah, it depends on what part of the country you're in, right? Because meanwhile, in, let's say, in New York City, you might get bullied for not wearing a mask, whereas in another part of the country, you might get bullied for wearing a mask, right? And this is where I say to parents, put your child's well-being above your own, you know, belief system or creed or what have you. You know, I would urge people to follow the science, and science tells you to put a mask on, you know, get vaccinated. But I'm not going to fight with parents who have a certain way of thinking or say, well, I know better for my child. What I will say is that it's important for children to have a sense of community. It's important for children to have a sense of normalcy in returning to school and feel like they're part of a greater setup, a greater community feel, a society. And if you explain to them, look, I have some reservations about this, but, you know, science and the general idea the government is dictating that we wear masks. And yes, there are people who might be immunocompromised or be ill or older, and they might die from this virus. So if you wear a mask, do it for someone else. You're teaching them altruism. You're teaching them a sense of community. You're teaching them that there is something greater than your own belief system. And it's also educating children and having communication skills. You know, how to address something when you don't necessarily believe in it. And by modeling that, you're really giving them a tool that's going to go a long way into their adulthood.
It's a work in progress any way you look at it. You know, those folks back in 1918 at the last pandemic didn't have social media, and they didn't have a lot of the things we're dealing with, and certainly didn't have computers for remote learning. So this is a whole new world, and it comes with intended and also unintended consequences. Sanam Hafiz, thank you very much for joining us. I appreciate it. And we'll be back with more of Fox 11 News in depth right after this. Don't go away. And if you haven't already, please check out my podcast. It's called What the Hell, and it's available wherever you subscribe to podcasts, or just go to whatthehellpodcast.com. That's it for this week's Fox 11 News in depth. Thanks for joining us. Before we go, we have another back-to-school story. Josiah Longori's father, a San Antonio Sheriff's Department detective, that's Josiah right there, his father was killed in a crash back in April. So the other deputies in the department showed up to welcome Josiah on his first day of kindergarten. You better grab some tissue for this one. It's sad. Have a great week, everybody. See you next time. Bye-bye.